looking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay. I'm bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are certainly not those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls, because right now we have with us on the line all the way from Eastern Canada, Don Scott. Hi, Don. How are you doing tonight?
Good evening, Dr. Stan. I am well, thank you, and it's great to be talking with you again.
Well, it's certainly good to have you with us. Don is a retired teacher. He's taught at there in Canada for many years, and after his retirement, he was just enjoying life until one day a woman with a condition known as chronic fatigue syndrome came to him and asked if he would be willing to help her, and that started a series of events that has led him to a fascinating study of what's going on behind the scenes. Don then has gotten into trying to understand the AIDS epidemic, the chronic fatigue syndrome, so many of the diseases that plague us today. So why don't you sort of pick up the story there, Don?
Well, thank you, Dr. Stan. Yes, I responded to an appeal of a lady sick with chronic fatigue syndrome, and as you mentioned, I was 71 years old, and that was 1995, and there were other idle things I thought I could do with my life, but when I heard her story, I realized that here was somebody who really did need help, and I began to help her. But at the same time, I asked myself, why is it that people with this terrible disease, chronic fatigue syndrome, more appropriately called, I believe, myalgic encephalitis, why are people with this awful disease so badly used, not just by the medical profession, which was often dismissive, but by their employers who were cruel, and by their unions who neglected them, by the human rights commissions that didn't respond to their appeals for help? And I began to investigate her disease. I had to recruit my son William to help me as a unpaid volunteer research assistant. And what we learned about chronic fatigue syndrome led us into a vast amount of detail about other diseases such as AIDS, Alzheimer's, multiple sclerosis, Crohn's colitis, Parkinson's, Huntington's, diabetes type 1, for we learned in our research that all of these diseases spring from a single etiological origin, a disease particle that most people know nothing about, including most medical doctors, but which is a very well-known agent to the United States, Canadian, and British governments, especially their militaries, and that agent, that disease agent, is called the mycoplasma.
Oh, all right, fine. And of course, it's very, very hard for people to believe that that our military might have actually released certain biological conditions on the American people. That's just beyond our comprehension. And yet, of course, any of you out there in the listening audience would like to get a copy of a report. It was actually issued by it's a report of the testimony before a congressional hearing on military preparedness back in 1969, where Dr. MacArthur was addressing a group of congressmen and talked about actually being able to, first of all, create a disease for which there would be no immune response, And secondly, another disease that would be chronically disabling, and for $10 million they could create these diseases. They needed the money. Of course, there were some people who questioned the morality of doing this because it would simply be another terrible means of killing. But if they just got this $10 million, they had the capacity to create these new diseases. And then it was a few years after that when these new diseases appeared on the scene in the mid-1970s, chronic fatigue, and then shortly thereafter, the AIDS epidemic. The first cases of AIDS, they weren't recognized as AIDS, but they did begin appearing, and of course, to the point where we are today. And one of the most fascinating and disheartening parts of this whole tragic situation is the organized effort to convince physicians that there is no chronic fatigue syndrome. And I know I've attended meetings where they've sent down their government-paid doctors to tell the practicing doctors it's all in their heads, there is no such disease. And yet, of course, Don, you've studied this, you know chronic fatigue is a reality. There are probably close to 1 million people in America with this disease. It's spreading throughout the world. I know whenever we do programs on it, I get calls from Europe and other parts of the world asking if they can reproduce the interviews that we've had. This disease is spreading all across the world, a disease we never saw before, and producing the destruction of so many people's lives. Isn't that true?
Yes, it is. And for those doctors who say it's all in your head, I would suggest that they get in touch with the patent office in Washington, D.C., and order patent number 5,242,820.
Now, what's the patent number again?
5,242,820. And that patent is for a disease agent called the pathogenic mycoplasma. And on page 20 of this document, which was a patent application by the senior medical researcher for the United States government, Dr. Shai-Ching Lo, on page 20 of the patent, Dr. Shai-Ching Lo indicates that, and I'll read directly from the patent, and it says, patients who are infected with Mycoplasma fermentans incognitus will be patients who have been diagnosed as having AIDS or ARC, that is AIDS-related complex, chronic fatigue syndrome, Wegener's disease, sarcoidosis, respiratory distress syndrome, Kabuchi's disease, autoimmune diseases such as collagen vascular disease and lupus, and chronic debilitating diseases such as Alzheimer's disease. That is in an actual patent granted to the United States government and based on biological warfare research by people like Dr. Shai-Ching Lo and a whole bunch of other people that we know very, very well now after our studies since 1995.
And, of course, you've had a chance actually to study the scientific papers they've written where they sort of brag about a lot of this, haven't you?
Yes, it's interesting that although they were engaged in a project which was reprehensible, evil, criminal, the science was very advanced and very dramatic for fellow scientists, and all the people involved practically like to write reports tracing the scientific background to what it was they were working on. Now, they started out working secretly on a project called MK-SVLP, which was a CIA operation to develop the AIDS virus and to create the chronic fatigue pathogen. And it turns out they're both the same thing, by the way. But in 1968, when Richard Nixon was elected president and took power in 1969, and appointed Henry Kissinger as his national security advisor, they brought this secret CIA effort to develop AIDS and chronic fatigue out of the basement and up onto the main floor of the White House and the administration of the United States. And they changed the name from MK-SVLP to simply SVCP. In other words, it wasn't going to be a special virus leukemia project. It was going to be a special virus cancer project. And Nixon said to the world, "We have declared war on cancer. We are going to find a cause and cure for cancer." And under the rubric of that label, they continued their work with much greater resources and with much more blatant recruitment of scientists, and they did develop and understand totally what they'd been working on in secret for a number of years before that. And we have all the documents to substantiate it.
Well, of course, it was during that era they began talking about the necessity of population control, and it was Henry Kissinger who asked for this a special report where they were going to talk about the means of population control throughout the world. I'm sure you're well acquainted with those studies, and basically they came up with this idea that we had to control the population in countries throughout the world, because if we didn't, they would then challenge our dominance over the rest of the world. That was National Security Study document. What was it, 200?
Yes, National NSAM 200, written by Kissinger, where he says that the problem of a growing third world population was a greater threat to U.S. security than was nuclear warfare.
And, of course, you have to understand, they couldn't tell the American people the real reason for it. They had to try to convince them, oh, we're so concerned about the poverty in these countries. We're so concerned about the women and the children. But it really was because they knew if they had developed a large population, they could become industrialized. They would begin to use their own natural resources. We wouldn't be able to get them from these countries at just a pittance of what they were worth. We could keep these people in poverty by saying, we want to stop poverty. We want to stop their population growth. And that's really what it was all about, because they realized if they, any of these countries, and they named them Bangladesh, Nigeria, other countries, if they ever got a good population, good population growth, they could become industrialized centers, and that was the last thing they wanted. They wanted to keep these people enslaved. So you have to understand that everything is hypocrisy. Everything is an effort to actually conceal the truth. Now, eventually, National Security Study Memorandum 200 was actually released and declassified, and we actually have it through our ministry. You can get it up on Africa 2000, I believe it is, .com or .org, Elizabeth Leagan's website. Do you have that on your website, Don?
No, we don't.
It is available up there, National Security Study Memorandum. I suspect the Population Control Research Institute has that. You need to get it. You need to read it. You need to understand they knew exactly what they were doing. And, of course, they had to create some means of limiting the population much more than birth control. And, of course, they developed it. And that's why people throughout Africa are dying by the millions of AIDS. And you say, well, we wouldn't do that intentionally. In Botswana today, 50% of the women 20 to 35 now are HIV infected. They're going to die. Do you think they could do a public health policy that poorly, unintentionally? And with that sort of a disastrous result, you wouldn't change the policy. You would continue doing exactly what you've done in the past, pushing safe sex and condoms and telling people to be as promiscuous as you want. Just use a condom, knowing full well their failure rate is totally unacceptable. And there are instances, certainly in Africa, where there is no sexual contact at all among people contracting this disease.
Yes, and we have to fit in the fact that in 1968, right after his election and right after the appointment of this evil terrorist, Henry Kissinger, as National Security Advisor, the United States government financed several groups of people to be sent from the Centers for Disease Control in Atlanta, Georgia, and they were to be sent to Africa and other third world countries, where they were to give everybody they could round up a free vaccination against smallpox. And they went over there and they vaccinated millions of people. And within 5 years, the evidence is that approximately 60% of the people vaccinated were HIV positive.
Now, where can we verify that? I mean, I've heard that before. Certainly, I know that here in the United States, where it was the homosexuals in San Francisco, and we have this study, or you can get that in Randy Silt's book, And the Band Played On, 80% of the homosexuals that took the hepatitis B vaccine came down with AIDS.
Yes.
I mean, unbelievable, and yet it was nowhere near that high in the general population. It was less than half that of the promiscuous homosexuals, probably a fraction of that, 80% of them, and they knew that. I read that figure for years, and I always thought that showed how communicable the disease was with promiscuous homosexual sex, until somebody pointed out. But the other alternative is there was something in that vaccine, and that's why 80% of them came down with the disease. You know, Doc, I didn't want to admit that. I mean, it bothered me to, I blocked that out. I could not accept it until, being hit over the head with the facts, and I suddenly had to say, well, of course that's what it was. But what about the smallpox? Where can we verify that statement? I've never.
Well, a very good document that you can get is to go back through the National Geographic magazines, and I don't know the exact date, but it is somewhere around 1974 or 75. And Dr. Henderson, who was from Atlanta, Georgia, and the CDC, recounts how in 1968 he got this rush phone call. He was to be in charge of heading over to Africa and other third world countries to vaccinate everybody they could get with this smallpox vaccine. He says he didn't want to go, but they really pressured him, and away he went with his several crews of people, taking with them all this vaccine that had been manufactured in the United States with the cooperation and participation of researchers such as Robert Gallo and Leonard Hayflick and Robert Huebner and others. And this vaccine against smallpox was pumped into millions and millions of black and brown citizens of this world. And if you read the magnificent study of AIDS by Edward Hooper called The River, you will see how from a very, very few cases of AIDS in the late 70s, there suddenly erupted all kinds of outbreaks and clusters, and the areas that were given the largest percentage of smallpox vaccinations had the largest percentage of AIDS victims.
Well, now, but wasn't Hooper writing about polio vaccine rather than
Yes, that's right. Now, Ed Hooper is a marvelous person, a marvelous researcher, and he is a great believer, like you and I were, about the goodness of mankind. But when he saw this huge eruption of AIDS throughout Africa and other countries, but especially Africa, he made it his life's commitment to find out where this all came from. And he discovered that over in Africa was Hilary Koprowski, and there was Leonard Hayflick, and there was Robert Huebner. And there were a whole bunch of people who were in the, he didn't know it at the time, Ed Hooper did not know this, but these people were in the MK Special Virus Leukemia Project, which was the project seeking to create the AIDS epidemic by a two-pronged attack. One attack based upon the mycoplasma, which would alter the endocrine balance of the individual, and a cofactor in the same vaccine HIV, which was made from the Vizsla virus of sheep through a stage called human T-cell leukemia 3, and then into a form that would infect humans, HIV. Ed Hooper did not know that background, and he approached it as an accident, because when these people went to Africa and said they were testing vaccines for polio, they were indeed doing that. But the evidence is also that they were testing the earlier stages of the vaccine to create the altered endocrine balance and the HIV infection. And this is easily seen. If you take Ed Hooper's book and read it carefully, and you see these people, Koprowski and Hayflick and Hubner and Gallo and all of these people in a book about AIDS, then you take the equally marvelous book by Hillary Johnson called Osler's Web, which is a history of chronic fatigue syndrome, you find the same people in the both books. And so Ed Hooper, here's my analogy. Ed Hooper is an honest policeman who went to investigate what he thought was a colossal accident. They should have sent their best homicidal detective, because it wasn't an accident, it was murder.
Well, of course, there was an article that appeared in the London Times, and it was sometime in the late 1980s, as I remember, 87. I'm sure you have that article.
Yes, I do.
And it was written, my understanding, by the editor of the London Times, based upon somebody who had come to him and said, I was part of this program of using smallpox vaccination to spread the disease. That was something that some of the initial researchers talked about in this, and there was that article was totally blacked out in the United States.
Yes.
Do you remember the details of that article? I'll have to get off to you off the air. I can't find my copy, but that is a fascinating article. It did appear in the London Times, and basically it said, who had come? Do you recall who it was had come and told the story to the editor of the London Times?
The person that the editor talked with and really grilled him on all the details was never identified, because, of course, the person said, look, I'm a professional microbiologist. I make my living at this business. This is such a huge thing that I'll never work again. In fact, his life might even be in jeopardy. So his identity was not revealed. But the very fact that it appeared on the front page of the Times of London, and I went up to our local library and dug that out of the files and photocopied it, and I have it here someplace, and like you, it's hard for me to access it on the spur of the moment, but I will dig it out and I will get another photocopy to you, Dr. Stan, because I know you can make good use of it.
Well, I think these are the things that people have to know. And so certainly the disease was spread in Africa, and you only find it in certain places, and it's an entirely different virus than the one we have in the United States. This is what you have to understand. There is not one AIDS epidemic. There are a whole flock of them, and they're all different. There's a different epidemic in America than there is in Africa, than there is in Thailand. There are HIV-1 and HIV-2, subtypes M and subtype O, and then the subtype M, you have A, B, C, D, and E. So how do you get all of these different diseases from somebody eating monkey brains or having an intimate relationship with a monkey? And you don't. The reason you get this in different areas is because it was something that was administered in these different parts of the world. But nobody ever wants to talk about that any more than I wanted initially to admit. When I saw that study, San Francisco cohort study, and I followed it for many years, and when almost 80% of the homosexuals who had taken the hepatitis B experimental vaccine came down with AIDS, I did not want to admit the possibility that maybe the reason they came down with AIDS is because they took the experimental hepatitis B vaccine. And nobody wants to talk about that because the implications are really of genocide right here in America.
Indeed. Now, in terms of Ed Hooper, you may recall that in 1959 there was the death of a British sailor named David Carr. And David Carr died of what appeared to be AIDS. But at that time, nobody even knew the expression. It wasn't known until 1971 when Dr. Thomas Merrigan at the Stanford Research Institute wrote an article about AIDS, and that was 10 years before there was any AIDS. And Merrigan, of course, was involved with Hayflick and Gallo and all that crowd. But anyway, in 1959, David Carr had died, and then when the epidemic of AIDS began to sweep across the world, and people began to say, hey, wait a minute, this was developed in an American laboratory, and the article in the Times of London said the same thing. A number of scientists said, oh, no, no, look, David Carr, he had all the symptoms of AIDS, and he died in 1959, so this was before this research could have been achieved. Now, the thing is, Ed Hooper, who wrote The River, really dug into the story of David Carr, and here's what he learned. He learned, first of all, that David Carr had been conscripted into the British Navy from 1955 to 1957. And when he was first recruited, he was one of a number of naval recruits who were given some kind of experimental vaccination. They were never told what it was. And and then he was discharged in 1957, and 2 years later he died of AIDS. Further along in time, when they had developed the polymerase chain reaction ability to analyze DNA and track disease agents and fragments, some researchers were able to access tissues and bone marrow of this dead British sailor who had died in 1959 of apparent AIDS, and they performed the polymerase chain reaction on these tissues. And what did they find? They found that, yes, indeed, David Carr had AIDS.
In other words, he was positive for HIV. That's what they were looking for.
He was negative.
He was negative for HIV.
He was negative for HIV.
Well, then how could he, I mean, because the definition of, you know, for most people is positive HIV.
Yes, but that's an error. Not error. That is misleading.
All right, and we'll talk about that when we get back from the break, but go ahead and make your point, please, Don.
All right. David Carr died of AIDS but had no HIV in his body. And when you turn to the work that was being done by Robert Hubiner, for example, who was supposedly in Africa looking out for the development of a polio vaccine, you learn that in 1956 in the United States, Hubiner was working with the American Navy on a disease agent called PPLO, plural pneumonia-like organism, and that is another name for mycoplasma. And Dr. Hubiner was working on it in 56, and they were testing it on American sailors, and they had a close cooperation with the British Navy, and the suggestion is very obvious that David Carr, in this trial vaccine that he received, was given the agent that causes AIDS, and it's not HIV.
All right, we're going to be back here in just a minute here with our special guest this evening, Mr. Don Scott. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and this is a time when we have to remind you that Radio Liberty is listener-supported, and we hope that many of you out there will believe as we do, that there are real problems in the world. We're not getting the truth from the regular sources of information, and so we hope that many of you will decide you want to join the Radio Liberty family and help us as we try to disseminate information across the world. Now, we have a unique opportunity to be on the air 5 hours a day to actually be reaching people, not only here in the United States, but throughout the world, and of course throughout almost 50 outlets every week. We're reaching out with news that, you know, people had just never had the opportunity to hear before. And so if you would like to partner with us in our effort to bring truth to the American people while we still have the opportunity, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. And you would be glad to send you a free copy of our newsletter. I certainly recommend our October newsletter. It's the suppressed testimony of Kristen Breitwiser, whose husband, Ron Breitwiser, died in the South Tower of the World Trade Center on September 11th of last year. She testified on the 18th of September before the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence. And her testimony, you can actually get it off the Internet. And when I say it's suppressed, I'm meaning the fact that the cameras were there. They were rolling the video cameras. Certainly the reporters were there. But other than mentioning that she had testified, there was very little mention in any detail about what she'd said. And so the average individual in America has never heard her testimony. We thought it was just so important that we put it into our last newsletter in toto. And so, you know, this is something you can show to people. They can verify it on the Internet. We can actually provide people the entire testimony. It's rather extensive, and it would be rather difficult to get it, but we actually do have that available. The entire testimony of a number of the people there, very revealing. The problem is that the government is doing everything they can to suppress a complete investigation or squash any of the lawsuits that are being brought, not to get money, but to get the truth, because the families of the people who died don't believe the government story. You're not getting that from the media, but they know that they've been lied to and that you've been lied to. And of course, it was because of that terrible tragedy on September 11th last year that we're about to go to war in Iraq. And I fear, and I hope I'm wrong, but I fear there are going to be disastrous results here in America, because whenever you go into an unjust war, and this is not a just war by any means of the imagination, why, you get into terrible, terrible consequences. And God does judge nations for their sins and what they've done. So if you'd like to join Radio Liberty and help us get the truth out, why, give us a call. Again, our number 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. And then I want to remind you, of course, that we are putting on an all-day conference. It's going to be at the Aptos Seascape, the golf course. It's going to be on the 23rd of November, and we certainly hope that you're going to be able to come. It will start at 8 o'clock, well, 8:45 in the morning, but the doors will open at 8 in the morning, close at 6 at night. You'll have a great opportunity. There will be a luncheon. There will be a syllabus, which we're putting together, which will give you a lot of suppressed information, but very important information, well-documented information that will help you discuss the issues with others. And so give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. If you're interested in coming, I believe you will not be disappointed. We're going to be talking about what you need to do to prepare for the difficult times that lie ahead, because I believe difficult times do lie ahead, and we're going to talk about what needs to be done financially, fiscally, and spiritually in preparation for the times that are coming. So again, the number 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, because America is at war today. Well, Dr. Stan back here. Our guest this evening is Don Scott. And, of course, Don has made the statement that HIV doesn't cause AIDS. Now, you have to understand what he is saying and the significance of what he's saying. First of all, most people who have an altered immune system, which characterized by a decrease in their C4 count, which are the C4 helper cells, so characteristic of this condition, we called altered immune deficiency disease, immunodeficiency disease. Literally all of them will have a positive HIV test, and that then became the criterion for diagnosing AIDS. But there were several other people who kept saying, but there is a cofactor with this. And it was this Dr. Lowe of the Armed Forces Institute of Pathology and Robert Gallo, Luc Montagnier, who was the man who first found HIV, who said mycoplasm is a cofactor. In other words, all of the patients who have AIDS, this clinical AIDS and a positive HIV test also are infected with mycoplasma. Well, you know, it's so difficult to have to think about two things. It's nice to be able to say, oh, yes, they got HIV, they've got this immunodeficiency disease. But there are several factors, and they all have mycoplasma. Now, what does that suggest to you? Well, there is a relationship between mycoplasma and this altered immune deficiency disease that we see. Yes, they do have HIV, and it's a very easy test to do, but they also have the mycoplasma. And the trouble is that many of the people with chronic fatigue will have the mycoplasma as well. In fact, some people have referred to chronic fatigue as non-AIDS, what's that term that they use, Don? It's sort of a
non-HIV AIDS.
Non-HIV AIDS. In other words, that old adage: the good news and the bad news about chronic fatigue syndrome is the good news is you're not going to die, and the bad news is you're not going to die, because these people are so miserable, and they don't die ordinarily, but they just they're totally devastated and destroyed. They can't think. Their mind doesn't work. They lose their jobs and their family and everything else. And they do not have the HIV component of this disease. And yet, of course, they're totally incapacitated by it. And this is what Don means when he says that HIV doesn't produce AIDS. It appears to be a double whammy, and I'm going to let you explain what the mycoplasma does in the human body and how it devastates the human body. And, of course, the government cannot let you know this, because this is a genetically created organism. And Garth Nicholson, and really one of the most brilliant scientists in America today, has analyzed this and says that this is a genetically modified mycoplasma, and they've taken a little clip of the HIV virus and put that molecule on the shell of the mycoplasm. And of course, but this is not the normal mycoplasm that's always existed. This is a new one. They've been working for years for this as a biological warfare agent, but how can they admit that when we've signed the biological warfare agreement, the treaty? I mean, it would mean that why we were not telling the world the truth. We were really working on biological agents that would kill off millions and millions and millions of people and disable millions and millions and millions of people. And so since we can't admit that, why, of course, the people who experimented on this have been demonized and marginalized, and it's constantly covering up even the reality of the fact that there is such a thing as chronic fatigue. And if you haven't read that excellent book that Don mentioned, Osler's Web by Hillary Johnson, you need to get it, you need to read it. It's one of the most devastating books I have ever read. Now, why don't you pick up the story from there, Don?
All right, thank you, Dr. Stan. The thing is that the same pathogen, the mycoplasma, is necessary for both chronic fatigue and for AIDS. However, AIDS has a cofactor which is called the human immunodeficiency virus, and that was manufactured, bioengineered, by Bjorn Sigurdsson and a number of other people, starting with the Wiesner virus from sheep, which of course causes mad cow disease, and Creutzfeldt Jakob. The first conversion of the virus, Wiesner virus, was to HTLV-3, and then that was converted into human immunodeficiency virus by their bioengineering. Now, in order to get a person ill with AIDS, they had to give them the mycoplasma to alter their physiological endocrine balance, which then destroyed to a very great extent their cellular and humoral defense system. Then they had to include in the same vaccine this HTLV cum HIV, and it had to be in liquid form, and therefore it had to be either in a vaccination or by sexually transmitted disease agents as semen and so on, or it had to be in a blood transfusion or in mother's milk. The disease agent, the mycoplasma, if it was conveyed by aerosol, such as they did in Tahoe Truckee High School on an experimental basis, or if it was conveyed by way of a mosquito bite, infected mosquitoes, and Canada infected the mosquitoes for the United States, we know that absolutely, we got all the documents, then the concentration of the mycoplasma was sufficient to induce in certain people the chronic fatigue syndrome, but there was no HIV factor, so they didn't present as AIDS. And all of this is in solid, solid government documents that we have accessed by various ways. And one of those is the Special Virus Cancer Program Progress Report number 9. And I know most of it. I know some key parts by heart. Excuse me. And one part on page 39 says this, and I quote from memory, but believe me, I am accurate on this. This progress report dated 1972 says that we have learned for the first time that in order to activate RNA-directed DNA polymerase, well, that's HIV, we have to first alter the endocrine balance, and that endocrine balance, in order to be altered, the mycoplasma is the agent to do that. And when that is done, the mycoplasma does a lot of things. It takes up cholesterol, which is upstream from all the hormones that are produced in the secreting glands, and people present with chronic fatigue and with multiple sclerosis, with Alzheimer's, and so on.
Now, did they actually mention that in the report?
In the report, they don't mention the diseases that the RNA-directed DNA polymerase is involved with, nor do they really spell out, unless you know all the background, and we've got the background articles that they were drawing upon. For example, we've got Huebner's 1956 article on the PPLO, which is the mycoplasma, and its influence on naval recruits. And we've got Dr. Tom Merrigan's report from 1971 on the viral infections of man associated with acquired immune deficiency, AID.
Now, when was that article published?
That was published in 1971, and we have a copy.
All right, fine. Now, we're talking 1971, the first known cases of this acquired immune deficiency disease. Really, it wasn't recognized until 1981, but the cases were around probably 76 or 77. Here's a fellow, he's from Stanford, isn't he, Don?
Yes, he was from Stanford, but he's now working for Robert Gallo.
Right, and of course, but back in 1971, they already were writing about this disease. They knew exactly what they were doing. But, of course, how could you admit this to the public? Now, all of this was in this war on cancer, and there were these very special viral cancer research reports. And there were 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. We have 8. We have 9. Don even has some of the more advanced ones.
They
tried to destroy all of these. They tried to shred them all because here was the smoking gun that would tie these scientists to genocide. And the orders were given, they were all to be destroyed. And fortunately, some of them survived. And of course, there are people like Don and a few others that have collected them and made them available to their ministry. Now, a lot of this is covered in a book that Don has written. And if what we're saying is, you're sort of over your head, what's the title of that strange Skull Valley incident?
The Extremely Unfortunate Skull Valley Incident.
The Extremely Unfortunate Skull Valley Incident. We do carry that book because we think it's important. And if you're, what we're saying is over the top of your head, once you sit down and you read what Don has written, then it begins all to fit together. And of course, the sources of documentation and the documentation of where the head of the CIA called in. Who did he call in and tell him to shred all of these documents?
Yes, Richard Helms called in Sidney Gottlieb, right, his director of planning, and he said, gather all these special virus cancer reports. This was in the middle of the Watergate scandals, and he said to shred them. And many of them, well, of course, most of them were shredded. A few did escape the shredder, and we have now got progress report number 6, number 8, number 9, number 13, and number 15, and we've gone back and we've got the documents that contribute to those reports, and believe you me, let me say this with the utmost assurance, that the AIDS pathogen is a dual-pronged attack on a human being. HIV, derived from the Vizsla virus of sheep, which is used to induce the characteristic diseases of AIDS, and the mycoplasma, which is derived from the Brucella bacteria and is designed to alter the endocrine balance of the individual so that his cellular and humoral defense is destroyed, and the HIV can have its way and infect the person.
And of course, it seems so difficult to believe that anybody could be that crass, indifferent to human suffering, but you must understand there are people who look at the world differently than you and I. And if any of you doubt that, we have, of course, the writings of Jacques Cousteau. You remember him. He's the fellow who plays with the dolphins. And writing in the UNESCO Courier in November of 1991, he said, we're going to have to kill 350,000 people a day. There are too many people. There are not enough natural resources there. We're going to have to kill 350,000 people a day. It's terrible to say it, but of course, it has to be said. Now, ladies and gentlemen, could you imagine somebody saying that? And, of course, being totally blocked out by the controlled media. The media would have to be terribly controlled to do that. We have the article, if any of you want that. Our telephone number, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. Go to my website at radioliberty.com, and you'll actually get many of the quotations from people, or even refer you to the Georgia Guidestones, where they talk about, and this is in Elberton, Georgia, killing over 90% of the world's population, maintain the population at 500 million in constant balance with nature. Do you really trust these people to lead us into a war with Iraq when they already have underground bunkers to protect themselves, but they have no civilian defense to protect the people of America? Oh, there are bunkers in Russia, there are underground bunkers in China, but none here in America. Maybe God has a plan for America, because, of course, God always punishes those countries that he's blessed that eventually have turned away from him. Our telephone number, of course, is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. We've got Mike calling. Hi, Mike. Where are you calling from?
Santa Cruz.
Oh, this is Mike from Santa Cruz. Okay.
I had a question on tobacco. My wife has had to take certain medications, and I looked them up in the book, and it said that tobacco would hinder the effect of the drug or whatnot.
Well, now, what drug are you talking about?
Oh, I can't.
No, we're really not even talking about drugs or tobacco. Why, I'm not quite certain why.
Well, the main point was they're trying to reduce the population, but they want us to quit smoking. Is there a correlation between, can tobacco hinder what they're putting into us through the vaccinations?
Do you have any thoughts on that at all, Don?
I'll hang up
what
and
I do
take
know,
my answer.
Okay.
the solid scientific evidence that we have, and believe me, it's so solid and it's totally reproducible scientific work, demonstrates that there is a vast plan, as Dr. MacArthur told the congressman on June 9, 1969, to develop a disabling agent so they could disable primarily white women so they wouldn't be childbearing, and a fatal agent which would be used to kill third world country populations. We have all that scientific evidence to that effect. Now, it's very important that the people who are carrying this out have a front of being caring, but they're not caring at all. They have their fronts. Don't smoke. Don't take drugs. Don't do this. Don't do that. But all the while they're saying this publicly, they are paying vast amounts of money to researchers, and they've been doing this over a great number of years, and the record is there. They developed the pathogen which alters the endocrine balance and leaves a person open to diseases such as the disabling disease, chronic fatigue syndrome, and with a cofactor, HIV, kills off those that they can vaccinate with a so-called smallpox vaccine.
Now, let me answer Mike if I can. Mike, I know that things seem to be sort of contradictory, but let me point out that it wasn't the government really that has done anything about, at least the federal government, that's done anything about nicotine. I followed this for many years, and initially the Surgeon General back in the 60s or 70s put a warning on cigarette packages that said, you know, this can be hazardous to your health, and cigarettes produce cancer. Now, smoking is a terrible, terrible thing. It does produce not only cancer of the lung, but cancer of the bladder and cardiovascular disease. Smoking is a terrible, terrible thing, but when the Surgeon General put that announcement, that statement on the cigarette packages, why, he really exonerated the tobacco companies. In other words, by putting it on there, the tobacco companies could say, look, you knew it was harmful. Why are you coming to us just because you got lung cancer and you're dying? You knew what you were doing. So what the government did, and they knew this was killing off a lot of people, but they allowed the tobacco companies to continue producing something that they knew was killing tens of millions of people every single year. It was not the government that put down, at least not the federal government, that put down smoking. It was the lawyers, the trial lawyers, who saw an opportunity to make a lot of money. And in the process of that, a lot of the money has gone to the states and it's being used for the tobacco ads. And I applaud these. I really do. Tobacco smoking is terrible. You should not be smoking. It's lethal. It's going to kill you. And I don't think that the government should be allowing something that is that lethal to be used and especially pushed on our children. And so basically, although I hate to grudgingly admit, it was the trial lawyers that brought this to an end, not organized medicine, and certainly not the federal government. Then, of course, when all of this money was available, then all the states wanted part of the money, and so the greed factor came in. But Don's point is absolutely right. They intend to kill off large numbers of people. That's why they did nothing about tobacco until recently. And who came to the rescue on a white horse? Well, it certainly wasn't the federal government, and it wasn't the state government, and it wasn't the medical profession, although in our meetings we always talked about it, but we never accomplished anything. It was the trial lawyers. Let's go to Joan here. Joan, how are you doing?
Great, Dr. Stan. I always love your interviews with Don Scott. Don, I heard recently that 30% of all women in the United States will come down with thyroiditis, and a lot of that is related to immunodeficiencies or immunological disorders.
Yes, indeed.
Okay, and I was just wondering where I could get more information or some research on that, and ultimately I wanted to know if there's a protocol for addressing that problem.
All right, the question, Don, is where could Joan get some information on that?
First of all, you can write to me at the Common Cause Medical Research Foundation. Just use the initials CCMRF, Common Cause Medical Research Foundation.
Okay.
Box 133, Station B, as in Bob, Sudbury, Canada, P3E, 4N, as in Norman, 5.
No, just give that a P what now?
P as in Peter.
Right.
3, E as in Edward.
All right. 4N.
N, 5. And send a self-addressed envelope with $1 to cover postage. And we will send you free of charge our 3-page protocol, which is called NV brucellosis, meaning new variant brucellosis, because we have, as I say, very solid evidence that the disease agent involved in chronic fatigue is the pathogenic mycoplasma, and it is derived from brucellosis. We will send you a 3-page diagnostic protocol so that you can determine whether you have this mycoplasmal infection, and then you can follow that up, if you wish, with further information that we provide, the very serious stuff we provide information on. We make absolutely no charge for, and this means we go before tribunals and insurance company hearings and all that sort of thing. But a self-addressed envelope with $1 cash, money order, or check. Don't send us American stamps. I have piles of American stamps. We can't use them in Canada.
Okay.
And we'll send you that 3-page diagnostic protocol.
Okay, anything else, Joan?
That's it. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye. And of course, will this organism respond to antibiotics if people actually have it?
Yes, and before the break, I'd just like to mention to you, Dr. Stan, that on Monday, we received from the publisher, Trafford Publishing, our latest book based upon our research. Now, we were working on this as we worked on Skull Valley, but the proof is now out, the book is now available, and it is called Amyotrophic Lateral Sclerosis, which, of course, is Lou Gehrig's disease. And the subtitle is The Probable Cause, A Possible Cure. And Dr. Stan, you as a medical professional will be excited to learn what we have learned, and I'll share with you when we get back from the break.
All right, we're just going to that break now. We're going to have to now say goodbye to our listeners up there in the great Northwest and Eastern Washington and Western Idaho and northeastern Oregon. So we will be continuing for another hour. If you'd like to get the full 2 hours, why, of course, it'll be up on the Internet at radioliberty.com, or you can give us a call at 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. Good night. Well, Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And, of course, we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But we ask you to hold your calls for the time being because, of course, there are many, many things that need to be covered. And, you actually, if you'd like to give us a call, don't hesitate. I was thinking of what we said that initially, but right now, if you'd like to give us a call, we'll be going on here with our interview with Don Scott, and he's going to be talking about, of course, some of the things he's found out about amyotrophic lateral sclerosis. Before we get into that, I wanted to ask you a little bit, Don. I was talking to a young man who was a Gulf War veteran who has Gulf War illness. And it is his contention, he claims he's talked to several people, several scientists, who were involved in developing an AIDS vaccine that was given to our Gulf War veterans, and that this is one reason why they are so very, very ill. Do you know anything at all about that?
No, I don't. I do know that there was a vast program of vaccinating the people who were destined for the Gulf and those who stayed stateside, as it were. However, the military and the Veterans Agency and the U.S. government health agencies have not been at all forthcoming about the whole thing.
Well, we know that they've simply refused to reveal the shot records. They say they're all lost, but
they obviously aren't lost.
They're covering up something, and I suspect that this was a great experiment that went wrong. Is that sort of your feeling? Another one of those experiments on our soldiers, which they feel that the military, certainly it's open season, we can use them for anything we want to. After all, they belong to us.
Well, this is the way I interpret it. Before the Gulf War ever got started, the United States was experimenting and working to develop the mycoplasma. And they were doing the major part of that work on Plum Island, just north of Long Island in New York Bay Area. And they welcomed into their midst the leading scientific microbiologist from Iraq. And they taught him everything that needed to be known about the mycoplasma. And they taught him everything they needed to know about its source, the Brucella melitensis, Brucella sui, and so on. And then he went back to Iraq armed with all of this information. And shortly thereafter, the Iraqi government ordered most of the ingredients that are enter into the development of the Brucella-derived mycoplasma, and that is in, of course, Senator Riegel's report, which we have a copy of and which you have a copy of, and they ordered from the United States Brucella sui, Brucella melitensis, Brucella abortus. They ordered the whole thing, and they had a well-trained expert in Iraq. So the possibility was very, very strong that Iraq then would proceed to arm itself with weapons based upon the mycoplasma. They also, however, had supplied Iraq with anthrax. Now, the disease is based upon the mycoplasma. If they're not accompanied by the cofactor HIV, do not cause AIDS. But they do cause chronic fatigue syndrome, ALS, and multiple sclerosis. And this is what they were afraid that Saddam Hussein would fire at them, and he did indeed do that. We have certain records, and I can't take the time to describe those, but there was a volley over two or three nights of several Scud missiles which were armed with biological weaponry, all up and down the Allied front. Biological alarms were going off, and the biological intelligence officers were saying to the people on the front, don't worry about it, don't worry about it, these are false alarms. Well, there was 12,500 false alarms in one night. And the people shortly after began to present with the presenting symptoms of chronic fatigue syndrome. Now the point is this, Saddam Hussein was firing Scuds armed with mycoplasma, which causes Gulf War illness, amyotrophic lateral sclerosis, and other long-term diseases.
Well, now, can we actually prove that that was in the Scuds? We do know that certainly the Veterans Administration has acknowledged there is an increased incidence of amyotrophic lateral sclerosis in our Gulf War veterans, and although it's not dramatic, it certainly is much more than you would expect in the general population. So, but
and,
can we be absolutely certain, is there any documentation, other than surmising, that he actually did fire Scuds which were armed with mycoplasma?
There is my very dear friend now, I didn't know her then, but Captain Louise Richard, a nurse in the Canadian Medical Corps, who was sent over to Saudi Arabia and was at the Forward Field Hospital, and a Scud exploded over their head, and they were surprised that no shrapnel or no ordnance peppered down on them, killing them by iron and lead and so on. And they thought, what in the heck is that? Here's a Scud fired at huge expense, exploding right over our area, and yet there's nothing coming out of it. And then people began complaining about a peculiar quality to the air, and Louise Richard, within 3 or 4 days, was presenting with great nausea, and a few weeks after that, her hair began to fall out by the handful. She developed extreme migraine headaches, and she presented with all of the symptoms of chronic fatigue syndrome, and when she came back to Canada, she said, look, Dr. Garth Nicholson is testing American veterans and finding the presence of the mycoplasma. I am very, very ill. Test me for the mycoplasma. And the Canadian military, who are as corrupt as their American military colleagues are, said, if you want a mycoplasma test, you have to pay for it yourself. So she sent her blood to Garth Nicholson, who analyzed it and found the presence of Mycoplasma fermentans and Mycoplasma penetrans in her. And they were presenting with these diseases that Shai Ching Lo associates with his patent of the pathogenic mycoplasma. Now, there was no general like General Schwarzkopf, who, when he appeared before Congress, was not required to take an oath. Because they said, General, we trust you. You don't have to take an oath. You can testify without an oath and so on. The American government knew when they were peppered with these Scud missiles and the biological alarms were going off, and some were going off to indicate the presence of a Brucella derivative, and there are numerous accounts of this, they also knew that they had supplied Saddam Hussein with anthrax, and that the next volley of Scuds could well be armed with anthrax. And if they were, anthrax has a 10% fatality rate, and if it landed in the area of 700,000 Desert Storm forces, they could expect within about a week 70,000 deaths.
Well, now, actually, pulmonary anthrax is even more lethal than that.
This is the minimum. I'm trying to be as absolutely objective and fundamental as I can.
Well, but, you know, this is a terrible, pulmonary anthrax is a terrible disease.
Absolutely.
And that is one thing they really fear would be using pulmonary anthrax. Now, the good news is, of course, it responds to antibiotics. The bad news is the vaccine doesn't do hardly anything, but that's why they're vaccinating all the troops. And that is the most incredible boondoggle I've ever seen of the monkeys that were vaccinated with, before they were infected. Eight out of the 10 died, and so we're going to give that to our troops to protect them? Come on now.
Very much so. But the other point is that after this heavy volley of scuds, when they were only hours away from Baghdad and total victory and deposition of Saddam Hussein, the telephone in Schwarzkopf's headquarters rang, and it was George Bush who knew full well about these shipments to Iraq because he was vice president and president when they were taking place. And he is as much a criminal as any of the people who were using it because he supplied it to them, or his administration and Ronald Reagan's administration supplied it. The phone call to General Schwarzkopf, and I have two or three histories written by the news people who were there and who were taking the daily briefings, and Bush said to Schwarzkopf, stop the advance on Baghdad. And Schwarzkopf said words to the effect, why is that, boss? We're making great progress. We'll be there tomorrow. And Bush says, don't move another foot. Stop where you are. What did Bush know that Schwarzkopf at least indicates he didn't know? He knew that in addition to buying the product for chronic fatigue syndrome, that is the Brucella derivatives listed in Senator Riegel's report, they had also sold anthrax, and Saddam Hussein could use that. And it is so terrible to me when I listen day after day to CNN, well, when I listen to it, it's on day after day, and they have these experts who say, we believe that Saddam Hussein has biological weapons. They know darn well he has because they supplied them to him.
They know that we supplied them to them.
Indeed.
Right, and actually anybody who would like to read a book, we have the world's only supply of it. It's called Against All Enemies by Seymour Hersh, written in the mid-1990s, pointing out that we had supplied the biological and chemical weapons to Saddam Hussein and funded him and financed him. This is well known by anybody who's ever done any studying. We have created the most successful and the most dangerous enemy that our tax money could buy.
But I wonder, Dr. Stan, if we could take another look at amyotrophic lateral sclerosis.
Okay, let's get into amyotrophic lateral sclerosis because this is a terrible, terrible disease. Usually strikes young people, progressive weakness of the arms, legs, and then, of course, it gets into the bulbar area. The people can't swallow and then eventually it paralyzes their breathing. And it's usually, in many instances, a very rapidly progressive disease. And there is nothing, at least until recently, that could be done for it. But there was always some very strange things. You'd almost see it in clusters. I remember there were a couple of people who were 49er football players that developed amyotrophic lateral sclerosis. You would just never see that ordinarily. And then there were some clusters down in a place called Huntsville, Texas, outside the prison there, where they were doing some experimental work on biological warfare agents. That's where Dr. Garth Nicholson got into trouble. So you pick up the story there, Don.
All right. First, for your listeners, amyotrophic lateral sclerosis is more popularly known as Lou Gehrig's disease because on July 4th, 1939, I believe it was, when he retired from the Yankees, it was revealed that he had amyotrophic lateral sclerosis, and people did not know what it was, and most of them didn't know how to pronounce it. So it was easy to say he's got Lou Gehrig's disease. Now, it's always been said about this terrible disease, which gives a person a prognosis of 2 to 5 years of life after diagnosis. And as Dr. Stan says, the progressive paralysis usually starting in the extremities and working back up to the lungs, so the individual suffocates. This disease is said to have no known cause and no known cure. And yet there were peculiar outbreaks of the disease, as Dr. Stan has also pointed out, as if something causing it was common to a particular area at a particular point in time. And we know of such an outbreak on an aircraft carrier in the Royal Canadian Navy, and we have certain facts about that we can't share right now because of the time factor. However, I want to say to Dr. Stan and to his listening audience in all seriousness and with great conviction, my son and I are very sure that our latest research demonstrates the cause of amyotrophic lateral sclerosis and a possible therapeutic approach that, if it doesn't cure the disease, will certainly slow it down. And I'd like to begin to outline this to you by just briefly telling you the way the amyotrophic lateral sclerosis works in the human body. And it's this: direction to the muscles of the body to move originate in the cortex of the brain. And from the cortex, they drop down what they call the upper motor neurons. And then there's a little gap, which we call a synapse. And that little gap can't be crossed by anything except particular neurotransmitters that are at the end of the presynaptic motor neuron. And most of the neurotransmitters are glutamate. There are others like dopamine and so on. Then with the crossing of the gap, there's another alpha or lower motor neuron, which then goes and delivers the message to the muscle to move. Now, what has been happening with victims of amyotrophic lateral sclerosis is, first of all, the synapses or the gaps at the ends of the motor neurons begin to wear out. Now, in a healthy person, they are constantly being replaced. But in the case of amyotrophic lateral sclerosis, there is no replacement or very slow replacement of the degeneration of the synapse in the motor neuron circuit. And when this happens, there's no message to the muscle. And when this happens, the muscle doesn't move. And when that happens, the muscle atrophies, shrinks all up, and the motor neuron itself shrinks all up, and the disease follows its progress up the spinal cord till it gets to the lungs, and they stop functioning, and the individual suffocates. Now, in our research, we were able to tap into some tremendous research done in Germany and reported in Science magazine on the 9th of November, 2001. And the title of the report in Science magazine is Central Nervous System Synaptogenesis Promoted by Glia-Derived Cholesterol. Now, let me translate that for you long-suffering listeners who don't recognize all of the words. The central nervous system is, of course, that system of motor neurons I spoke to you about. Synaptogenesis means the manufacture and replacement of the synapses that get worn out. And how do they get replaced? They draw upon glia cells which manufacture cholesterol and secrete it to the motor neuron, and the motor neuron uses it to build new synapses. Now, we tie that to a piece of research being done in 1971 by three of the people who were working on the development of the mycoplasma. Dr. Rodham, Dr. Friend, and Dr. Hayflick. And their article was titled, The Dependence of the Mycoplasma on Cholesterol. Now, here's the point. If you have a mycoplasmal infection, and Dr. Garth Nicholson's tests of Gulf War veterans who have ALS revealed that 100% of them had the mycoplasma infection. If you have that mycoplasma infection in the glial cells next to the motor neurons, the cholesterol being generated by the glial cells is not available for the motor neurons. And when that happens, the synapses are not renewed and replenished, and they die, and the muscle dies. And we have put this study, which took us hours and research, and we substantiated all with fundamental, reproducible scientific evidence. Especially, we start off, of course, with Rodham, Friend, and Hayflick's work in 71, but we go to then through the other research to the CNS synaptogenesis promoted by glia-derived cholesterol, and we demonstrate that amyotrophic lateral sclerosis is a two-pronged attack. It is an attack by the mycoplasma on the glia that manufactures cholesterol for the motor neurons, and it is an attack upon the synapses so that the messages from the cortex to the muscles are destroyed. And we're confident that our report reflects reality, and that if we get dead serious about this awful disease and the other mycoplasma-incited diseases that are listed in Shai Ching Lo's U.S. government patent, that we can put a stop to amyotrophic lateral sclerosis by a two-pronged counterattack. There has to be a delivery of tetracycline or one of the other bacteriostatic antibiotics to the glial cells to cure the disease agent, the mycoplasma, to limit its work and allow the cholesterol to go to the motor neurons. Then there has to be another treatment, including riluzole, R-I-L-U-Z-O-L-E, because riluzole is an agent which will destroy the excess glutamate that develops, because when the cells are killed, they rupture and dump excess glutamate into the blood and plasma of that area. So tetracycline and riluzole is an approach which we feel confident is well worthy of careful study and experimentation, because scientifically, the model works. We know there is a cause for amyotrophic lateral sclerosis, and we know there is a possible cure.
Well, now, what about the use of antibiotics with the people? Has this been tried at all? I know that Dr. Nicholson had tried that for a time, but is there any long-term follow-up of prolonged use of doxycycline or one of the other tetracyclines in these people with this sort of a condition?
Well, this is a totally new model that we have presented, and there has been absolutely no tests employing the full model of both a bacteriostatic agent to control the mycoplasma and another agent to destroy the excess glutamate and allow the cholesterol generated into glia to rebuild the synapses of the motor neurons. That's why we're reporting our research and saying, look, folks, let's get serious about this. Let's have a proper trial. Now, Dr. Nicholson, we were well aware, was doing great research on amyotrophic lateral sclerosis in Gulf War veterans. But we intentionally did not read his work until we had finished our own. And I say intentionally because we know there's a tendency of researchers to accept other people's research and give up on their own or have their own modified. And our research is brand new. The model is brand new. There is, we suggest, very strong scientific evidence waiting to have the proper test procedures done. And we're prepared to help people achieve that.
All right, fine. Well, I think it's a very interesting concept. Now, of course, I can remember when I was in medical school in 1949, I think it was, going to Laguna Honda Hospital, and there were cases there of amyotrophic lateral sclerosis. So this was really long before the mycoplasma was out there. But do you think there can be several causes for this?
Well, no,
disease?
Wait a minute now. The mycoplasma has been in existence probably as long as there's been bacteria.
All right, so you think that then it was not necessarily this genetically modified mycoplasma?
No, the thing is that back in 1898, Nocard and Roux, a French scientist at the Pasteur Institute in Paris, reported on the mycoplasma.
All right.
In fact, they gave it its name. But you see, there's a difference between a disease agent that occurs naturally once in a million times and a disease agent that occurs in Gulf War veterans who were subjected to various kinds of biologically engineered vaccine agents and Scud missiles exploding overhead and so on.
Well, the question is, did they get the mycoplasma, which a fair number of them do have, from the Scud missiles or from the vaccines?
Well, the thing is that whether they got it from one place or the other, Dr. Nicholson's report, which we read after we had done our research, says that 100% of Gulf War veterans who have ALS and who were tested by him with polymerase chain reaction are infected with one of the mycoplasma species, 100%. So if they've got a mycoplasmal infection, and if the cells that the mycoplasma is destroying are the cells that generate cholesterol, because go back again then to Rotham, Fend, and Hayflick and their article on their research, which demonstrated that if a mycoplasma does not get cholesterol, the mycoplasma is finished.
In other words, it's going to consume the cholesterol so it can survive. Is this what you're saying?
It's absolutely essential. In fact, I was looking at a quote tonight in Dr. Manilow's book, Mycoplasmas, and I'll just read it to you. In contrast, it says, many mycoplasma species are unique in having an absolute growth requirement for cholesterol. Now, that is in the most authoritative text on mycoplasmas by Jack Manilow and his fellow editors, and several scholars who have been researching it. So that the mycoplasma, which Dr. Garth Nicholson detects in amyotrophic lateral sclerosis victims, has an absolute dependence upon cholesterol. And the motor neurons have an absolute dependence upon cholesterol. So if the cholesterol is being consumed in the glia cells before it ever gets to the motor neurons, amyotrophic lateral sclerosis will present. And we've reported this in a little book we call simply Amyotrophic Lateral Sclerosis. And it is available from us, or if you, Dr. Stan, would like to add it to the Skull Valley book which you handle, we would be happy to, it's also published by Trafford, and you can get in touch with them and share this with your listeners, because amyotrophic lateral sclerosis causes 3,000 deaths a year in Canada and somewhere over 50,000 a year in the United States. It's worth at least taking a look.
Oh, well, I'll certainly look forward to getting a copy, and I'll talk to you off the air about how we can get a copy.
I've got an envelope addressed to you.
All right. God bless you. Well, we're going to have to take a break here. And when we get back, of course, we'll welcome your calls from out across America. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Our guest is Don Scott. And, of course, we're talking about the mycoplasma infection. And, of course, the fact even the government admits that the Gulf War veterans have an increased incidence of this terrible disease, ALS. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and this is the time when we have to remind you that Radio Liberty is listener-supported, and we hope that many of you out there will decide that you want to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters and help us do what we do 5 hours every day as we reach out across America on the airwaves, on the Internet, on shortwave, by satellite. And it's amazing and it's exciting to find out that more and more people are beginning to understand what's really going on behind the scenes today. So if you would like to, of course, fellowship with us, to partner with us in this effort to educate people about the Constitution, what's happening to the Constitution, the organized, coordinated effort to change America from a free society to a totalitarian society, and then the spiritual forces which energize the wicked people who are intent upon destroying what was once the land of the free and the home of the brave. Why, we hope many of you will decide right now you're going to join with us. And our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, because America truly is at war today. America is under attack. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. And then remember, certainly our website, it's www.radioliberty.com. That's www.radioliberty.com, and you can listen to our programs there 3 hours a day live, many archive programs. You can link to our other two programs, one at the American Freedom Network, that's americannewsnet.com, the other at the Genesis Network, that's gcnlive.com. One at 7 o'clock in the morning Pacific, the other at 3 o'clock in the afternoon Pacific, then followed by our 4 o'clock program, which is a Radio Liberty program, which can be heard directly on the Internet at our site at radioliberty.com. And then, of course, we have to mention to you, once again, the conference we're going to be having. It's going to be on the 23rd of November at the Aptos Seascape Golf Course, an all-day session, and we're going to be stressing preparation of what needs to be done to prepare you for the difficult times that lie ahead financially, physically, and spiritually. And let me simply point out that if you are not prepared for what's lying ahead, and nobody can be absolutely certain, we can certainly surmise what's coming, but the important thing to do is to make preparations, because as has happened in so many other countries within this last year, in Argentina, you've simply wiped out the middle class. You've impoverished people who spent their whole life working for their retirement, for security. And, of course, because they believed what they were told and did not understand the monetary system or what's going on in the world, these people are impoverished. Half the people in Argentina, which a year ago was a prosperous country with a large middle class, half the people are living in abject poverty on an income of less than $43 a month. And believe me, things are just as expensive there as they are here. So if you'd like to come, learn more about our all-day program. Doors open at 8. They close at 6 o'clock. There's going to be a luncheon syllabus. Give us a call at 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, because America is at war today. Well, Dr. Stan back here, our guest this evening is Don Scott, and we'll let you know you have his address. We'll get that out just one more time during this hour. And if you're out there in the listening audience, you have a question or comment for Don, our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here on the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. It's very difficult for the American people to believe that there are wicked people who would create diseases to kill large numbers of people, and yet we created the A-bomb, and we didn't need to drop it. The Japanese had offered to surrender 6 months beforehand, before the peace treaty was signed, and of course, they tried 5 times to surrender, and we refused to accept their surrender. That meant that the invasion of Iwo Jima and the invasions of Okinawa, these terrible, bloody invasions, were totally unnecessary. just simply military exercises. He said the enemy was already beaten, and they'd acknowledged and they were ready to surrender, and certainly dropping the bombs at Hiroshima and Nagasaki were unnecessary. If you'd like a copy, it's not a very good copy, but we have it, Chicago Tribune, 1945, on the very day the peace treaty was signed, that tells you exactly what I'm telling you now. We'll be glad to send it to you free of charge. Give us a call at 1-800-5-HIV-WAR if you'd like a free copy of our October newsletter that tells you about the attack on September 11th. Why, give us a call. Again, our number 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, but right now let's go to Nathan, who's calling from Contra Costa County. Hi, Nathan. How are you doing?
Oh, hello, gentlemen. I guess my question is, if all of this is true, what is the overall agenda? Why reduce world population like this? Why would these Malthusians want to reduce world population?
Because they're because they're Malthusians.
Okay, but I guess what I'm saying is what I understand that, and I definitely do understand that there is a population control agenda, and I'm not entirely sure what I think of AIDS just yet, although I'm definitely interested in the subject, and I'm definitely not unaware of a lot of the things that you're saying. But I guess I'm trying to get to a question of motive.
First of all, who was Malthus? Who was Thomas Malthus?
Are you asking me?
I'm asking you.
He was a minister, unfortunately.
He was a minister of the gospel. I'm not sure what gospel.
But he was, but definitely not the gospel of truth.
Right.
He believed that as population increased, that resources would not increase to keep pace with it, that population would increase exponentially and that resources would not, and that therefore, basically, you could not exercise too much altruism or too much compassion, or you would basically interfere in the calling of the herd. And I guess you're saying that that's how these people honestly view the world, which is a rather sad commentary on the humanity.
It really is, and of course what everybody misses when they discuss Thomas Malthus is what really energized him. And for our listeners out there, Malthus lived in the latter part of the 18th century. And of course he was around from about 1770, somewhere there, till shortly after about 1800, somewhere at least in that time period. He was a contemporary of Thomas Paine. In fact, many people said that we should not educate the lower class of people, because that would, if they learned to read, they'd be able to read the writings of Thomas Paine. Malthus, on the other hand, said he wanted the lower class to learn to read so that they could read the writings of Thomas Paine. And of course, he wasn't concerned about the concepts of his revolutionary zeal and individual freedom. He wanted them to read The Age of Reason, which was, of course, based upon a concept of destruction of Christianity. And that's what the purpose of that book was. The Age of Reason was an effort to destroy Christian belief. Yeah, and, of course, both men were deeply involved in the occult, and that's what really has been missed all along, is what energizes these people who want to kill off much of the world's population is simply evil. And Thomas Malthus wrote that we should not, certainly, we should encourage, we should build our cities next to stagnant ponds. We should discourage individual cleanliness and certainly never try to stop the spread of deadly plagues. And there's a wonderful book. It's called The Legacy of Malthus, we have copies of it. And we don't actually carry it. The book is out of print, but we have the book. And in that, of course, the quotation I just gave you, we can make available to you. He was an evil and wicked man, and that is why they want to kill off a large part of the population. Does that answer your question, Nathan?
Well, certainly a mouthful. I just would clarify, though, that I believe that Malthus and Paine were members of two different Masonic factions.
All right, fine.
It may not be too relevant to the conversation.
Okay.
I think, in general, you've answered my question.
All right, fine. Thank you. Would you like to say?
Well, I say bring it right up to date. Take a look at Henry Kissinger, Nixon's national security advisor, who wrote NSAM 200.
National Security.
National Security Study Memorandum number 200, where he outlines for the President and the Joint Chiefs of Staff the necessity of slowing the rate of world population growth because of the effect it would have on American standard of living, because the demand locally of an increased population for locally produced wealth would not be available to the American maw. Just get NSAM 200 and start from there, and
I'm
then find out,
it,
what,
yeah.
find out what, when Kissinger was in that role, he was in charge of the CIA, among others, and get them to explain to you what MKSVLP was all about, and you'll find Robert Gallo tied in with that research. And then, lo and behold, out of the blue comes this great epidemic of AIDS, killing 6,000 people a day. Just start with Kissinger.
Okay, and Kissinger is one of the most evil people in the world, at least according to the article in West Magazine we have. He and Robert McNamara were regular visitors to the occult center in Colorado called La Baca, created by Maurice Strong. Anything else, Nathan?
Oh, no, no. Just a general, I'll leave off with this, that basically we need to, this whole thing violates the divine commandment against murder, which is, you know, very, very clear. It's spelled out before the law of Moses was given back in, you know, if you go with the biblical chronology back after the flood, that, you know, it's very, very clear that when you devalue human life, you devalue the image of God. That's how it seems to me.
Okay, I think that's well said. Thank you so much, Nathan.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. And when you image, devalue human life, you defile the image of God. I think that's beautifully said. Our telephone number, 464-8295, or 1-888-24-LIBERTY. And let me just carry that over to the coming war with Iraq. How many people will die? They're talking about as many as 500,000 civilian deaths, you know, if we go in there. Who is responsible for that? Have these people in any way been responsible for Saddam Hussein, who we financed all during the 1980s, who we left in power in 91, allowed to remain in power in 93 and 95 when his own military wanted to get rid of him? Who's responsible for those civilian deaths? Oh, we've got to take out Saddam Hussein because he's going to attack New York City or Washington, D.C. with his nuclear weapons if we don't take them out. And if anybody honestly believes that Saddam Hussein really intends to attack New York City, they've got to be incredibly naive. When you poke a stick at a rattlesnake, why, he'll strike back. And that's what we're doing. We're poking a stick at a rattlesnake, which is Saddam Hussein, to get him to strike back. And when he has nothing to lose at all, he knows he's going to be killed or convicted of war crimes. If any of you doubt that he's going to strike at Israel, or any of you doubt that if he possibly could, he would strike at New York City, we are provoking all sorts of horrible consequences by an insane process, the concept of going to war. And what is so insane is that so many good Americans and so many Christian leaders are supporting a war. People have forgotten what General Sherman said. War is hell. Go ahead, Don.
Well, I would like to focus on the listeners who are ill with Alzheimer's or AIDS or Parkinson's or Huntington's or multiple sclerosis and these other diseases, which are characterized by the fact that something is accessing individual cells in the lateral ventricles or the substantia nigra or the beta cells of the pancreas and so on. As something is accessing those cells and destroying those cells by uptaking preformed sterols.
Well, now, let me just ask, though, that certainly Huntington's is a genetic disease. So how does the mycoplasm play into that? And I know the answer, but I want our listeners to know.
Well, by genetic disease, you mean that the genes in a particular area of the brain, in this case the putamen of the brain, everybody has putamen and so on. We won't go into that. That particular area of the brain has cells which all carry the DNA, and particular genes in those cells are producing an enzyme called Huntingtin, and that Huntingtin, we don't know exactly what it does, but we know that it's produced. But we also know that something is getting into the putamen, accessing the cells, and destroying them. And when those cells are destroyed, all of the motor neurons, both receptor and activator, and the interneurons that crisscross through the region of the putamen are destroyed, and the symptoms of Huntington's present. There is that genetic predisposition in the victims whose parents each have the defective gene. So genetic predisposition works in everybody in different ways. Like the victim of Parkinson's, he has a part of the midbrain called the substantia nigra, so-called nigra because it's darker color than the rest. And if the cells in the substantia nigra are invaded or accessed by the mycoplasma, and not everybody's cells in the substantia nigra will let it in, but for those who let it in, that is a genetic predisposition. And once it's in there, it'll do no harm until it has some kind of trauma, such as when Pope John Paul fell in the bathtub, boing. That trauma triggered the mycoplasma into activity, and it starts destroying the cells of the substantia nigra, and that destroys the production of dopamine, and the loss of dopamine loses control of the modulation of muscles. So it's all very scientific, it's all very technical, but we have all of the scientific evidence we need to make a very solid case. Now this coming summer, from July 13th to July 27th, here in Sudbury, our foundation is offering a two-week colloquium. This year it is on the mycoplasma, its nature, and its role in all these diseases. And if you are a victim of Alzheimer's or AIDS or diabetes type 1 or multiple sclerosis or chronic fatigue syndrome, think about our colloquium on July 13th to the 27th, 2003. It'll cost you $900.
Oh, you can't put the price out on this.
Oh,
time.
I can't.
You can't put the price out. But
oh,
you can
okay.
tell the people that they should learn about it.
It's economic, we'll
right.
put it that way.
Right.
And we will share with you the absolutely solid evidence. There's no doubt about it. And people can see this for themselves, because our only goal is to say to those people who are affected by diseases that are have their etiological origins in the mycoplasma, here's where it's coming from, here's what you can do about it. And, you know, at my age 78 now, sitting here at almost 1 o'clock in the morning.
Yes, I know it's getting late.
Yeah, and I don't complain about that at all, because my focus is on sick people who are entitled to be healthy. And they are being so led around by the nose, by the Henry Kissingers, the Richard Nixons, the George Bushes, and all the rest of them. And I'm here to say, look, here's the evidence. Read the evidence. Don't go by what you're told in popular TV shows and newspapers and so on. Read the evidence. Look at the evidence. None are so blind as they who will not see. Well, open your eyes and take a look.
And, of course, the great tragedy is that there really have been these terrible experiments. Everything has been done to suppress this information, even to the point, and Don, actually, in his book on the extremely unfortunate Skull Valley incident, gives you the reference to the book written by one of the people who was close to Richard Helms, the director of the CIA, where he tells Sidney Gottlieb, who incidentally was the mentor of Jolly West, who was repeatedly in visiting Tim McVeigh before the trial there, that told Sidney Gottlieb to shred all of these various cancer viral research project reports. Why? Because the last thing they wanted was a paper trail that would point out the genocidal program. Now, everybody sort of ridicules the idea. You know, those crazy, the people who believe that AIDS was manufactured in the United States. Why, that's just what the communists say. The communists say that America manufactured the AIDS virus. And because the communist says it, most people will say, well, it couldn't have happened. That's just disinformation. Is it? Where did the AIDS virus come from? Because it sure didn't exist before. It is not one AIDS virus. It's a number of different AIDS viruses. And then, of course, we get into this mycoplasm and this amazing work that Don has done, collecting all of these various papers. Many of them have been actively suppressed. Many of them have been shredded, but a few of them did survive. And because there's a network of people out here who are concerned, they've gotten them into the hands of Don and Joyce Riley and a few others. Don, you do offer many of these reports through your ministry, don't you? How can people reach your ministry?
Well, it's not a ministry in the sense that most people use the word ministry. It's a foundation.
All right, your foundation.
It's the Common Cause Medical Research Foundation, and they can write to the address I gave.
Once more, give
Box 133, Station B, as in Bob, Sudbury, Canada, P as in Peter, 3, E as in Edward, 4, N as in Norman, 5. Write to us, join our foundation, and help us in this common cause, because when Shai Ching Lo said in his patent that the mycoplasma will be diagnosed in patients who have AIDS, chronic fatigue, Wegener's disease, Kabuchi's disease, lupus, Alzheimer's, he was only giving part of the list, and the other part includes diabetes type 1 and amyotrophic lateral sclerosis. You family members of victims of ALS, write to us.
Now, Don, what about the autoimmune diseases? For instance, the autoimmune diseases that attack the thyroid, as Joan had asked about earlier.
Oh, yes.
It. And what about the autoimmune disease that attacks the liver?
Right. I meant to address that for Joan, and thank you for reminding me. The mycoplasma uptakes cholesterol, and the cholesterol is, of course, upstream, as they say, from the glands that secrete the necessary hormones to regulate everything from temperature to hunger and that sort of thing. And one of the glands, pattern of glands, the hypothalamus pituitary adrenal thyroid cycle, is affected by the lack of cholesterol because it's being usurped before it gets to the glands, and hence the glands can't secrete the necessary levels of hormones. So thyroid conditions present, adrenal conditions present, pituitary conditions present, and that leads to people thinking chronic fatigue is caused by a destruction of the adrenal, pituitary, hypothalamic axis, and so on. But it's because the cholesterol, which is the essential element, is no longer there in the quantity needed. And it's also evident, for example, cholesterol near the surface of the skin, when the ultraviolet of the sun hits it, the cholesterol is converted into vitamin D, which is then used to manufacture new blood. And if it's reduced, then new blood is reduced. And that's why we have found that people with chronic fatigue and these other diseases usually have anywhere from 10 to 15% less blood in their body than their body weight requires.
All right. Well, there's just so many aspects of this whole condition, and this is poorly understood. And one of the problems is that you can have a mycoplasma infection, and the superficial test that will, can be ordered through regular laboratories will not show this. You really have to get the PCR that can be done only in very specialized labs to determine that. And then, of course, the tragedy is that most doctors do not recognize this. It's not, you know, certainly Dr. Nicholson has published a great deal about that, but this is not something that the medical establishment, at least some of the leaders of the medical establishment, working right along with the military-industrial complex, and they certainly don't want doctors to realize that these things could be going on today, why they might begin to question so much of what they've learned. They might begin to make the diagnosis of chronic fatigue syndrome and then wonder why the government has covered up the existence of this disease and, of course, suggested that these people simply get psychotropic medications or Prozac or something rather than the treatment they really need, which can, in many instances, reverse the condition. In fact, there have been some very, very good treatments. Acyclovir, I think it was very effective in treating it. It was an antiviral product, or it was, at least it was a very effective product, and the FDA refused to license it, so it couldn't be used here. It could be used in other countries, couldn't be used here. We might ask why the FDA, the CDC, were conspiring to keep these people from getting treatment. Don, we're just about out of time. What are your parting thoughts for our listeners?
Well, my thought is that if we open our eyes, if we examine the very solid evidence and see the truth, then the human family can go back to enjoying a higher level of health, and human beings can fulfill themselves according to their God-given potential. And when that is done, then we are moving closer to that brotherhood of humanity, which is certainly not evident in any of the Kissinger, Nixon, Bush, Cheney approach to the world, to health, to war, and so on.
Well, I agree with you totally. We are facing a tragic event of what happens when a nation and its leaders have turned its back on God. Thank you so very much for being with us, Don. It's always a pleasure, and I appreciate your staying up until 1 o'clock in the morning back there in Canada to share with us.
And you'll be getting a copy of our book, Amyotrophic Lateral Sclerosis, in the mail in about a week to 10 days.
God bless you. Thanks so much, and we'll be talking again in the not-too-distant future.
Thank you, and
thank
good
you.
Night.
Good night. All right, fine. That's Don Scott, and I hope our listeners out there I've enjoyed it. Don has done an amazing amount of research work in collecting many of these actively suppressed reports. And so, well, we're just about out of time. I hope you understand we are involved in a conspiracy against evil. And that is what motivates many of the people, at least the leaders of the people on the other side. If you want to join us, remember our number, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. Pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for our leaders. Even pray for Henry Kissinger. And at last, of course, we ask you to pray for my ministry, Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. And so until tomorrow at the same time when we'll be back with you, Dr. Stan, goodbye, and may the Lord be with you.
there's not too much. Some people think there's going to be, some more terrorist attacks. I don't know. I get a lot of reliable information in suggesting it. Time alone is going to tell us, it may very well be that, we've managed to inflame and anger enough for the Muslims that they will coordinate some strikes against us, or who knows, maybe the CIA will coordinate this whole thing. But I think that they're going to have a lot more attacks to create a lot more fear on the people. So if you're willing to get on.